Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Photo with Catherine Hall and Leo Laporte. Episode 38, recorded December 20th, 2011. Tanya Niwa. TWiT Photo is brought to you by Ford, featuring available Sync with My Ford Touch. Sync with My Ford Touch gets you to your destination with integrated turn-by-turn directions and directional arrows displayed on the screen. Check it out in the new 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT. It's time for TWiT Photo, the show that covers the art, the fine art of photography with some of the best photographers in the world, starting with our host, the great Catherine Hall, CatherineHall.net.
Thanks,
Leo. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
You're a little scratchy today.
Today, you can call me Olga.
Olga. is here. You had a little cold.
Today I have a sexy voice. I had a cold, and this is the result.
Oh, well, I hope you're feeling better for the holidays.
I will suffer through it for the show.
Good. I like that. This is our last show of the year.
I know.
Oh, my.
Exciting.
Well, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you.
Catherine has a great blog, CatherineHall.net, if you click the blog link there. And every week she has tips and tricks.
I think, Leo, Tony should have given you a link to a photo. Did he not?
He might have.
It's in the show notes.
These are beautiful. I love this kiss, though. You can't go wrong with a kiss.
Well, we can. I had something else prepared, but we'll just go with
it. No. Is it down lower in the blog or?
No, I don't. I'm not sure where it is.
Okay, let me go back.
It's okay. We can.
And see what it says here. So, go ahead. You start the tip, and I will have a link. I will have something before you.
Because you're that good, Leo. I'm nimble with the fingers.
So, what is your tip?
Well, there's going to be kind of two tips with mine today, mm-hmm. and it will coincide with what Tanya's going to be talking about. But first off, we'll talk about the Photoshop tip. And I think a lot of times you look at Tanya's work and other people that you see these really rich black and whites, and it's been sort of a challenge.
Yeah, because
digital,
you're shooting in color,
creating
right.
beautiful black and whites. And I think a lot of times what happens is you're losing that sort of depth and that contrast.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to just add more contrast, because then you'll end up clipping the shadows, blowing out the highlights. So I really play a lot with the medium tones and doing more the tonal contrast and what they would say clarity in Lightroom, and adjusting those midtones and not really doing much to the lights and shadows.
That's a good point. So there is a clarity slider. We talked about it last week
in
Lightroom. So you just nudge that over a little bit.
I'll definitely nudge over the clarity. And you have to be careful with skin tones,
because right.
some people you don't want to bring out all the texture.
This is a great
skin.
Example. So you used Lightroom to make it monochrome and then just use clarity to bring
out
the midtones? Or is this something maybe...
You know, I typically won't actually put it to black and white in Lightroom because sometimes I don't know which way I want to go with the image. So I'll take it into Photoshop and I'll do all the retouching I want to do, and then turning it to black and white will be the last step.
Interesting. This is from Burma. This is Myanmar.
Yeah. And so... That's typically how I do it, but I'll use NYX software.
I was going to say.
Their color effects.
Yeah, or NYX,
silver effects. Yes.
Amazing monochrome filters.
Exactly, and play with that. And then I also use their tonal contrast, which is in the color effects 4 filter pack.
When you say clipping, so there's a lot of white in this and there's a lot of black in this image and a lot of midtones. When you say clipping.
That's like when you're going outside the histogram. So you want to retain, you want to keep your highlights and your shadows.
The peak shouldn't go off the chart.
Exactly.
Okay.
So typically, traditionally, if you add more contrast, then you're actually doing it on the extreme ends
right.
of the image.
Right.
And you're going to end up losing information in your shadows, what they call blocking the shadows, so you don't see the details in the
right.
shadows. And then clipping the highlights, so you're not seeing details in highlights. So I really try to avoid doing that because I love texture.
Right. And this is a good example because the face paint just really comes through.
And then I know Tanya's a big user of NYX software as well, so we'll talk about that further in the show. And then the other reason I wanted to use this image is just talking about how you can find inspiration within other cultures. And this was actually a trip I did at the Myanmar-Thai border.
So this was a refugee, this boy.
Yes, and it was a project I did actually in college. This is old. Mm. But it was one of the first things that got me really passionate about project photography, where I'm looking at cultures and examining them and photographing them and telling a story. And at the time, I created a book that was really talking about what was going on in these refugee camps, why they were there, and sort of trying to use photography as an educational tool.
That's neat. Well, speaking of international borders, we have an international guest
this week. We have an international guest today, which we're super excited about. The first time I became exposed to Tanya's work.
Tanya Niwa.
Welcome.
Welcome to Twit Photos. Good to see you.
She's frozen with a smile.
Yeah, she looks good, though. That's a perfect.
Oh, I just lost you for a second.
No, you're back.
If only I could freeze.
Good.
Like that. When I freeze, it's always like, ah.
You're calling from Sydney, so that probably explains some occasional Skype pictures.
Yeah, so the first time I came across Tanya's work, it was at WPBI, and it was because she was on the stage nonstop in 2007 getting awards. So she got, I think you got like 3 awards that year, which is kind of it's huge to get one. She was carrying all this glass. But anyway, point of the story is her work just blew everyone away that year. And that's how I first became connected with you and seeing your work. And I'm really excited to have you here today.
Welcome, hey. Tanya.
Thank you. Welcome.
So I noticed a lot of Tanya's work is with the Maori people. In fact, I think looking at you, you might be a Maori yourself.
That's right. My dad is Māori, and my mum is, we say in New Zealand, the Māori word for a white person is Pākehā, so which is Anglo-Saxon European origins. Yeah.
So you're from New Zealand originally?
New Zealand, yes. I'm New Zealand born.
You're a Kiwi.
I'm a Kiwi.
A Māori Kiwi.
Yes, a Māori Kiwi, yes. That's it. Yeah.
And a lot of your photography, and we're looking at some beautiful images here, are of the Māori people. First, tell us a little bit about the Maori people. These are the people indigenous to New Zealand.
Yes. Well, they traveled on canoes, apparently from perhaps Taiwan, and went along past New Guinea and then down to Tonga, and then traveled on to Hawaii, and others came down to New Zealand on canoes.
So part of the massive Polynesian diaspora. They're all over the South Pacific.
Yes, yeah, and then, you know, they picked up partners along the way and crossbred, and that's how we got our, as far as I know it and understand it, that's how we got to have our, the features that we have. And we're a very, very strong and proud culture and very a warrior. We come from a warrior background, so you know, they used to, in the 1800s, they would be warring against each other, and so very fierce and proud, but very earthy and also very respectful of the land and culture. So that's something that has really been instilled into me as well.
And they touch noses when they greet.
Yes, they do. They do.
I love that. I think that's such a great tradition. I've always wanted to go to New Zealand. Catherine and I have been to Australia.
Yeah.
But New Zealand's got to be next on the list. I'm just dying to go.
I know. It's beautiful there.
And I've heard people go to these. They have these. They're probably very touristy, so my apologies. But Maori greeting celebrations. And they're a little terrifying because it is a warrior society, right? So it's scary, and there's drums and masks and stuff. And then they touch your nose with their nose, which must be the ultimate in getting completely disarmed. It's like, oh.
Yeah, that's true.
They're nice.
So,
I think that... Oh, sorry. Once the Australian Prime Minister at the time came along, and I think he thought that he was meant to rub noses from side to side, like that. But no, it was just touch instead of touch. So it's kind of one of those things that got replayed on the news quite a few times. Everyone was thinking that was hilarious.
Don't nuzzle.
This is good. Don't nuzzle.
Yeah,
just
don't
touch.
Yes, you just touch. It's graciously.
So how prominent is your culture, like?
Oh, well, there are so many words in the New Zealand language that are Māori words, and we use them every day. For our tummy, instead, no one ever says tummy, they say puku. Mm. And you say, oh, my puku is full, or I've got a fat puku, or that's one thing. Or If someone's a bit crazy, they go, oh, he's a bit porangi, which porangi poaka, which actually literally translates to crazy pig. But really, but you just say, oh, he's a bit porangi. Yeah, and so that, yeah, there's lots of words, and they are counted as part of the New Zealand English language.
And then now, how has this affected? So obviously, you have this heritage that you're very proud of, and we're seeing your imagery, and it's obviously had a big
it's
influence
gorgeous
on this.
Stuff, yeah.
Yeah, well, when I was when we were children, my family moved away. They're both teachers, and as part of being a teacher, you have to, when you've got out of college, you have to go to a country school because that's always harder to get teachers. So my parents moved to a country school, and my dad was a principal, and my mum was the other teacher when we were very young, and we didn't really know a lot about anything to do with our Māori culture. My dad was brought up to be a little bit, like, it was a little bit embarrassing, your heritage back then. It wasn't as well accepted. So, but when I was nine, we moved back to an area 20 minutes away from where I was born. And that was a really blue-collar, strong, proud, sporting seaside town, a little town. It's only 4,000 people. And they were very culturally proud and strong. And all of a sudden, I guess I was sort of introduced to the Māori culture. All we did prior to that was Dad would teach us songs in school, Māori songs, but I didn't really know anything at all. And I do remember maybe when I was about seven, my mum said something about, oh, you know you're Māori. And we're like, what's Māori? We don't even know what that means. So it was pretty, you know, because you've got kids at your school that are brown and white and you don't know any different. You didn't really know much. But when I got to this new town called Waitara, all of a sudden it was a big deal. And all of a sudden I noticed that I was very pale and I actually wasn't brown enough. So that was a real big deal. My sister's a lot darker than me and she has more of the Māori features and I didn't. So all of a sudden I was wishing I was a lot darker. But I guess I had the best of both worlds. I have my great, you know, heritage from both sides. But the exciting thing was we got to live next to the Māori meeting house, which is called a marae, and that's where all the people from our tribe would meet. And there's beautiful carved houses. Do you have that image as well?
Yeah, let me see if I can find that. Yeah. So let me see if I can find that.
Yeah, it's a traditional meeting house and it's all hand carved, and it actually in the carvings has the history of our culture. So it will explain who our ancestors are and what we call the wakapapa, which is your history, your family history. That's all entwined in the meeting house.
In fact, I have a picture of your ancestor here. If I can just, my computer seems to
stalled. We have a picture of my great 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 grandfather, who was a warrior scout for Tefiti, and Tefiti was a pacifist tribal leader. So one of the my tribe on my one side of my dad's side, his role was to go out and make sure and see what if there were any other tribes wanting to sort of infiltrate them, or the European settlers. They had actually arrived, so they had to sort of. He was sort of one of the protecting scouts. So my surname originated from him. So Niwa, our surname used to be Rangi Niwa, which was child of the Nga Rangi Niwa, child of the mist.
Mm.
His grandchild, they used to call him child of the mist because he'd be waiting for his grandfather to come home. So
wow, wow, that's neat. Mm. And here is the picture of the hut that you were talking about.
Yeah, I'm
yeah, curious. A hut's an understatement. If you said, "Oh, let's go to the hut," you'd probably get slaughtered because it goes back for a long way. It's probably like the Native American.
The long, you know,
really, really long.
Yeah,
same style where everyone sleeps in the same room. If there's a funeral, which is we call a tangi, then the body would be in the house, the meeting house, and everyone would sleep there. Maybe sleep a couple of hundred people. Or if there was a wedding, you'd have the same sort of thing. Yeah.
It's interesting. I noticed totems in front. And they remind me very much of the totems that you would see in Native American culture.
Yes.
And British Columbia culture.
Well, there's a really strong bond between the Native American, particularly Canadian as well, the artists there and the artists in New Zealand, I've had a lot to do with them through my New Zealand contacts, and they have noticed there are lots of similarities and appreciation for similar things.
It makes you wonder if there might have been some cultural interchange a thousand years ago, you know, because
we think that there was, from what we understand, the basketry weaving is very much identical. There's some the ways that the basketry weaving was started, because obviously that's with baskets, that would be how they would carry their food or eat their food or hold produce. They're exactly the same as what they are.
Interesting.
So that's what makes historians think that there was, you know, there were meetings many years ago.
So this has clearly become an important part of your photography, but it's not the only thing you do.
I do have a quick question. I'm looking at these images, and a lot of them, before I knew their context, I thought they were from like a small village in Africa or like somewhere very, you know, secluded and took forever to get there, dangerous to get there. Where now I'm finding out they're not, and I'm like, oh, I want to go to New Zealand and take pictures.
I do too. I'm dying to go to New Zealand.
And I'm curious, you know, if you are a photographer, how accessible are these tribal areas, and are people wearing traditional clothes, or is this something that you're orchestrating? I mean, as a foreigner, how realistic is it for me to go to New Zealand and capture this type of imagery?
Well, I started my series in New Zealand. There's probably two or three images you've got there that I started in New Zealand. The one you're seeing on screen now, that's in Sydney. Just most of my tribal portraiture are from people that live in Sydney that I come across. That's taken at the Rocks in Sydney, which is you know, in the heart of Sydney, a really old building that was like a blacksmith's or something like that. Mm. So in here, this is in Sydney at her home, this lady Benedicta. So,
what is she holding? Is that a root or is it
a date palm?
Date palm.
So it comes off a palm. And it's a symbol of fertility. So, that's all very symbolic. But in answer to your question, Catherine, when you go to New Zealand and you go and watch cultural performances, they dress up especially for the occasion. It's a you know, a special thing to do. So you wouldn't find people walking around looking ready to be photographed. It would be meeting people that you could work with and sort of orchestrating it, I guess you'd say.
It's such a beautiful culture. And I'm like you. It looks like you're doing the picture that we were talking about earlier. It looks like there's some tilt shift in it, and they're doing some interesting things on this one as well. So tell us a little bit about
the goats.
Yeah,
everyone thinks they're sheep because New Zealand has a lot of sheep, but they're actually
no. I know they're goats. I can tell they're goats.
I was traveling with a very good friend, Joe Falk, from after we were giving a seminar in some vineyards in Tauranga, and we were driving to Auckland, and I never do road trips where you stop on the way and you can take photographs, and because I was with my very best friend who is a photographer, we stopped. We saw a paddock of goats. We were really excited, and that was on 35mm
in film days.
So,
wow.
Yeah, that's probably a little bit broken up in your low res file, but that's a photograph of the photograph. So in the dark room that was using chemicals in the dark room.
Wow.
So
not
yeah.
Photoshop. That's all done with chemicals.
No, not
you know,
Photoshop.
It reminds me a little bit of an early turn of the century photograph, almost a daguerreotype or something.
Yeah,
it has
it
that silver, looks like a silver photograph. It's really beautiful.
Well, I find it interesting because this is a perfect example of it. I think a lot of her work has so much Photoshop in it. And we were talking yesterday, and a lot of it's just she captured it on film.
It's not Photoshop.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the tilt shift then.
Yeah, sure. Well, the image that you saw of the lady holding the date palm, and then there's all... Yeah, I'll start with that one. So I used a lens baby in the really early days of lens baby. They're a lot more, sophisticated now. See, that's the lens baby, and this is... You choose what aperture you want to actually put into the...
you get decreasingly small rings that you put in there.
Yeah, you put... So I used...
It's very primitive.
An F2 ring. So that, and then you just squeeze it to work out where you want the area of sharpness to be. So it's all very basic, and that was really fun because that was shot on digital, but it's exciting to go back to really basics and just work on composition and keep things really simple, But it's also, it was exciting because I used to shoot a lot on 5x4, and that was just a way of getting back to 5x4, but just with a much easier and more fun way to do it.
So you do the same thing with a view camera. You can move the bellows in and out and change the change the focus at different parts of the picture.
Is there a particular...
So you can have more than one area in focus, but with the Lens Baby, it's very hit and miss. You've really got to be...
It's trial and error. It's kind of a lot more primitive. Yeah, exactly.
Do you use the old one, and is there a reason for that?
Oh, I just actually looked on the website in the last couple of weeks. So my partner, Michael, he loves photography as well. So we're just looking at the latest and greatest. I think it was the Composer Pro. Things have been upgraded a lot in Lens Baby. So I just happened to have this one, and I've never, you know, bothered to upgrade it. I haven't used it for a long time, but now that I can see it, they've worked out all the little things that will help us, you know, to make it easier to use. We're going to order one online this week.
You know, it's funny because tilt shift's kind of entered into the vocabulary of photographers, and now it's in the iPhone. Their iPhone app has a tilt.
Oh my gosh. You
could say make that in focus and the rest blurred, and it's basically a tilt shift button.
So oh, yes. In the Snapseed that they've got a little bit of.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. I use Snapseed a bit for that,
The argument would be, you know, get the image pure and focus, and then...
Because you could do that in Photoshop after the fact. Yeah.
Why do you feel it's better to do it in camera?
Well, you know how rewarding it is to create an image that you haven't done a high amount of Photoshop on, other than what would have done in the darkroom? I think in my own heart, it makes me feel like I've accomplished and achieved something much greater than what our digital artist could do. I mean, I really appreciate what you can do with Photoshop. We would never be without it. But from a satisfying point of view and fulfilling in heartfelt point of view, it's nice to be able to do something in camera without a heap of Photoshop. So with the Lens Baby, it's pure. You know how you just want to keep yourself excited, and I work really, really hard, and I don't get to shoot a lot for myself. Well, I don't choose to shoot a lot for myself anywhere near as much as I should. And to do shoots like that one was very exciting because you don't know what the results are going to be when you're playing around with things like a Lens Baby. And we also shot on a really high ISO and just used a natural light. We just and a modeling light. So
it's fun. It's experimenting. It's fun. We're talking to Tanya Niwa. She's a photographer from, originally from New Zealand, now in Australia. TanyaNiwa.com.au is her website. We're going to talk more with her and get some tips, her three tips. And just a little bit before we do, though, I want to talk a little bit about Ford Motor Company, our great sponsor. The other last week, we had three Fords in-house. We were able to play with the My Ford Touch and the Ford Sync on a Focus, a Fiesta, and a Mustang. And in fact, I'm going to take you for a ride right now in our Ford Focus. Take a look at Sync Services. Watch this.
Hey, it's Leo Laporte here for This Week in Tech. You know, you've heard me talk about my 2010 Ford Mustang and how much I love Ford Sync. The folks at Ford have just lent me the new 2012 Ford Focus, and this has got my Ford Touch as well as the Ford Sync and some really nice new features, including Wi-Fi. It's got the Ford services, the Sync services, and App Link, which allows me to play apps right from my phone. I thought I'd take you for a little ride and show you some of the things it could do. Come on. Let me just show you this screen. I'm going to keep it, I usually keep it on this, the home screen. You see all of this stuff here very easily, but the point is not to look at this screen or even touch the screen. The point is you're driving down the road. You want to keep your hands on the wheel, your eyes on the road. But I want to, let's say, find somewhere I'm going to go. So I press this paddle here. That's the signal to get Sync to listen to me. Listen. Street address.
In California, say a street address including the city.
140 Keller Street, Petaluma.
Say a line number.
1. So again, I haven't touched the screen. I haven't done anything except talk to it. I'm going to press this button. Set as destination.
Setting destination.
And we're on our way. But let's say we're lost. We want to go somewhere. Destination POI.
By name or by category?
By name.
POI name.
J. Jack in the Box. So now it's going to find all the local Jack in the Boxes. But there's a number of them, so I could pick which one I want.
Please choose.
Line 1. Set as destination.
Setting new destination.
And now we've got a map, and it's going to walk me through it, and we're on our way to Jack in the Box.
The route guidance will start now.
Thank you.
Ford.com/technology to learn more. We're talking to our great guest, Tanya Niwa, a photographer from Australia, and having some fun as well. You want to? Go ahead. You take over. I always get involved, and I'm going to stand back and let you take over.
Well, thank you, Leo.
Because I want to have some more caramels. Would you like a caramel?
Thanks. That'd be great.
Yeah. Here, I'll pass it. These are made by nuns in Mississippi here. They're delicious.
There we go.
That's so mean.
There we go. I wanted to say one quick thing based on what we were talking about before with using the Lens Baby. I do think...
And do you use one?
I don't, but someone in our chat room said this, and our chat room is so smart.
They are.
But I do think that the way they're fractions of light, and it never looks the same when you try to do it in Photoshop.
Oh, I agree. In Photoshop, it looks like you Gaussian blurred everything,
and then it doesn't look
the same. No, I agree. Right. There's no gradation. And the Lens Baby isn't a great lens, so you get artifacts and weird, as you say, weirdness that is fun. That's part of the deal.
Yeah, so I do think there's a lot of value in that, and definitely experimenting and playing and doing it in camera.
That's true.
So, Tanya, one of the things I noticed about your work is you have these beautiful, her black and whites are so rich.
I love the black and whites.
And I talked about this a little at the beginning of the episode, but what do you do to achieve sort of the film quality and digital?
We use an extra layer. We don't use, in the adjustment layers in Photoshop, we don't use that actual black and white layer. We make a separate layer and we change the... We do it in Photoshop. That one there. Okay.
This is a perfect example. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, and for sepia, we just make a really strong sepia. That image doesn't have any retouching whatsoever. It is a digital image from 5x4, but there's no, there's nothing, you know, what you see is that's how it was, other than we've made it a really rich sepia tone.
Mm. How do you do that?
I think it's in the red channel. We might do red and yellow, minus 20 and plus 20. Actually, I'd have to show you that, wouldn't I?
So
my designer, we have our production manager who is full time. Yaisha, she does all of this for us. I mean, I can do it, but I don't have to do it on a daily basis.
Yeah, none of our photographers that we've had on the show yet do the Photoshop themselves for the most. Peter Eastway may be the only one who does.
Yeah.
A lot of them have their assistants do the touch up and the
fix. I do it myself.
Because it makes you crazy.
Slave.
But it's so much work,
I'm
right?
A slave.
I do enough in Photoshop that for if I'm getting things ready for a client viewing, if someone else is busy, but my shoulder's pretty stuffed from holding a camera for so long, so many years. So I just, is taking photos and replying to emails. That's my day, is replying to emails and talking to clients. There's not a lot of time for Photoshop at all. I work pretty big hours as it is. So if I was stuck in front of the computer doing Photoshop all day, I'd go nutty.
Do you use a lot of Photoshop? I'm looking at this image, for instance, which is just gorgeous and...
Was on film as well. So
film.
That was on 5x4, Posnick.
That's why it looks so good. It's 5x4.
Yeah.
And it was dark. So I painted, this is back in the days where I had time, lots of time. I painted a really huge roll of dark brown paper, photographic paper. It's like the backdrop for a studio paper. And I made a tortoise shell shape on it. And because I was able to blur it using the 5x4 so that it wasn't completely in focus, you can't tell that it was sort of like hexagonal shapes from the tortoise shell. Mm-hmm. So I just painted it to be like that. And then I was able to darken the edges in the dark room so that you just drawing in on the guy.
Yes. So why attire?
Well, it's not very deep, meaningful at all. It was that when I was... when I was younger, my friend was a he rode motorbikes and he had a tire downstairs, and we just thought that would be a great texture.
It is, because it's black and the texture and the light and the it works perfectly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you play with props a lot when you're shooting?
Yes, well, when we're going to photograph someone, whether it be one of the African girls or a Samoan man or little Jamila here, they had that hat at home. She's a French African and her dad's German, Australian descent. We find things that belong to them so that they are unique to them and to their culture, because props make all the difference, and that's what sets them apart and makes them unique. So definitely a big... the background and the props. So when I'm organizing a shoot, I don't have a set idea in mind generally of what I'm going to do. I just make sure that we have a really great setting and we can have lovely lighting that we can create or use natural lighting, and all the right props. So
is this in your studio?
No, that was at their home.
Oh, so that was their home. Wow.
The production manager I had at the time, about that was a few years ago, Stephanie, she's actually an artist, and we actually got her to paint a canvas with that setting, and she stood in front of it at her home, so we took it to her home.
That's neat.
So, yeah.
Mm. Beautiful. I like how this is processed. Tell us about this one.
Well, that's on film as well. So
yeah, you could see the film grain.
Yeah.
I when I talk with clients, occasionally you'll find that someone has a common interest, and mine was there was a sculptor, a lady who's a sculptor that I really, really loved, and I didn't know how to get hold of her, and she said she had one of her sculptures at her house, so she invited me to use her home because she had a lot of Indigenous art and sculpture at her home. So I was able to take these two sisters who were adopted from South America to an Australian family, so they're not actually related by blood, but they were both adopted to the same family in Sydney. And, yeah, so we took them there, and they had these little the outfits that they had their mum had brought, because that's from their home country. And, yeah, that's just natural light and in front of a painting. So there's no, again, no, great deal of digital manipulation. It's just sort of like a bit... I guess muted, the tone of just being muted a little. And it's on, I think it was on 1600 ISO.
Yeah, there's the grain, yeah. Do you still shoot film?
I'm very happy to say I don't shoot film anymore.
Enough! And yet, you get such a great effect here that I don't think you could do in the digital.
It's great not to have to go to the lab and pay them all this money for to get your film processed. In saying that, though, I really love doing the 5x4 with the POSNEG and having to process the film out on location. But you've really got to have a whole lot of help, because it's all very heavy with your tripod and your 5x4 camera, the film bucket and all of that sort of thing. So that's a big thing. So that was on the same shoot. So that sculpture in front of her is called a garden spirit. So that sculpture is actually made by a lady that has made some beautiful sculptures around our Manly seaside suburb. And I just put her in front of it. It's quite spiritual. What's behind it is an Indigenous Aboriginal painting. So it just, and I also, how you have the rule of that you normally don't have a person right up close to the edge of the frame.
Facing out like that, yeah.
Yeah. That was me breaking the rules.
You're a rebel. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, some people love it and some people don't, but...
I love it.
I mean, I think I was in love with it. Beautiful. The girls were just so beautiful to photograph. And as much as, you had to bribe them with chocolate and stuff to keep them going.
Well, that's actually interesting, because she talks about bribing with chocolate. And it's so funny because I look at these images and they don't look like normal kids, like...
Well, look at the eyes on this girl here.
And
this is,
they're such a serious.
She looks like a mountain nymph that you caught.
I know. How do you? Expressions.
Well, she was only 3 years old. You just come across these people really, very rarely. And this little girl, she has a little bit of Samoan. She's a little New Zealand girl, but based in Sydney. She had a really short attention span, but. But yeah, and what's in front of it is my family gave me that carving. It's a special New Zealand Oamaru stone, which was smashed recently when someone did our gardening. you're not going to get this kind of look from just anybody. But that was shot on 6x6.5 film, and behind it was a painting that I'd done years ago that I'd put her in front of, and it was the eye from, it's a picture of the eye from the meeting house of one of the carvings, so that was inspired by that. And I'm just practicing with repetition with the spiral, which is obviously a Māori symbol, and then the eye, which was a Māori face, and then her big beautiful round eye, so it's just sort of practicing repetition.
You get such great tonal range on film. You don't miss that. I mean, I'm just, the tones of this are incredible.
Yeah. Like, oh, it's so rich.
Yeah.
You don't miss that, though. You're willing to give it up.
No way. I don't miss that at all. Yeah. You don't get a sore back if you just take your photos to the lab and you write out the order, and you're not sitting at the computer for hours on end.
I love the film stuff, though. It just reminds you that digital, we did collapse the dynamic range a little bit. We don't have that tonal range that you do, especially with a large format camera like that.
The grain just isn't the same. No. It's like it's noise versus grain.
Let's get your tips in just a second. We're talking and having a great time doing it with Tanya Niwa, who is a New Zealander, a Maori who works out of Sydney.
Yeah.
And her website is tanyaniwa.com.au. And
there's
some beautiful
images
there.
She's going to give us some Photoshop tips, too. She's going to do a
Photoshop
little demo.
Another Photoshop demo. I love that. Yeah. I'm getting better at that. Thanks.
This is our first time.
Thanks to this show. Briefly, want to mention our friends at Netflix, a great deal in streaming video. I'll tell you, $7.99 a month. Don't listen, Tanya, because you can't get it in Australia. $7.99 a month for all these movies, unlimited, great films. I'm going through, Louis C.K. is hot right now. He has a TV show on FX called Louis that I had never seen. Both seasons on Netflix. I'm loving it. And I love the idea of devouring TV shows like a box of candies, one after another. No commercials, no breaks. Just, and I'm telling you, it is the best way.
Is that what you do after you leave here, Leo?
Yeah, I devour TV shows like candy. You know what's fun is I'm watching it on the big screen because I have a Roku box. You can do it with the PlayStation 3, Nintendo, Wii, Xbox 360, most Blu-ray players, many TVs now, but I use a Roku box. And then, so I watched that. And then, you know, I went to bed, and then I thought, oh, I want to watch one more, and I pulled out the iPad, and I watched it on the iPad because there's Netflix. You can watch it anywhere.
But, okay, so you got me onto Breaking Bad.
Isn't that great?
Season 2.
Oh,
you
wow.
guys have that
yes.
down there? Isn't that a great show?
I saw the last episode of the first season. Had not heard it before. And went,
don't tell us anything. Isn't it crazy?
No spoilers.
It's very unpredictable.
It is.
You cannot predict
Shocking.
It.
Shocking.
And I'm in season 2, and did you notice in season 2 that they switched the DP? The photography.
They did.
Like,
and he's Romeo.
Way better.
Yeah.
I was watching the episode.
Really
I'm like, wait, what happened?
Yeah.
Anyway, but
that's really interesting that you noticed that.
Oh, I noticed it right away.
Yeah,
shockingly different.
Yeah,
and then it's very good.
We went down and watched Dexter shooting a few months ago. Another great show.
Actually, Dexter is my absolute favorite.
Yeah, another great show, also on Netflix. And
what does it say about you, Catherine? If you love
sick.
Dexter,
she's sick. But they told me they have a great DP. This guy is amazing, and he does The Sopranos, did The Sopranos, a bunch of other wonderful shows. But they still use the same old – they use old cameras that they had shot the pilot on because they didn't want the look to change.
Oh.
And here they are, I think, 6 or 7 years later. There are much better cameras, much lighter, much smaller. And for that reason, and I think they're sensitive to this, they didn't change the cameras – so that they could still get that Dexter look. And it is, it's a unique look.
Pretty.
It's hot and burned in a little bit.
Yeah, it is. I noticed that the first time I saw it.
Yeah, and that's the camera, and they didn't want to change that. So they do pay. It's actually neat. When you get a great DP, these guys are photographers, and they're really thinking about composition and lighting and look and feel. I was watching the Dexter DP, Romeo, and work, and he's playing games on his iPad, and every once in a while looks up and goes, no. And they'll go, and he picks it.
Well, you know what the intro of Dexter.
So
you're
amazing.
In for something good.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Same people did that as did the 6 Feet Under.
Oh, that was
open.
Just
awesome.
See, that show made me depressed.
Well, it's pretty morbid.
They all kind of do. What's up with us liking these dark
anyway,
shows?
We're talking TV, great movies, great TV, $7.99 a month. I got a deal for you. Free for the first month when you use TWIT. So go to Netflix.com/TWIT. And start watching tonight. You're going to love it. And if you're already a Netflix subscriber, and I know most of you are, this would be a great, the holiday season, great time when you go home to family and friends, tell them about it. It's a great gift. In fact, my mom just sent me an email saying, are you going to give me Netflix again for my birthday? Because her birthday is January 2nd. I said, yeah, we have this tradition. I give her a present on Christmas and Netflix for her birthday.
And now she doesn't even want the DVDs anymore.
No, she doesn't anymore. I gave her the DVDs when it first started. Now she's just streaming. She said, no, that's fine.
She's with it.
Save you money.
She's with it, Leo.
Netflix.com/TWIT. All right, I'm going to pull up our tips, Tanya's tips. I like that. Tanya's tips.
Tanya's tips with Tanya.
And these are Photoshop tips.
Yeah, some of ours. Yeah. We're going to start off with talking about adjustment layers.
Yes, well, we, in pretty much everything we do with every image that we are preparing, we will use adjustment layers. And when we are getting it in order ready for a client to view and purchase their photographs, there are we'll choose certain images that we may want to do some adjustments on, and say if we were had a family photograph and we might be switching one person's head, then we may as well then go and do a couple of other things, and we would do an adjustment layer, a number of adjustment layers, and that's simply to, in a photograph, even though you have the correct exposures, there might be areas in the photograph that are too dark or too light that you could adjust to make the photograph much better.
It's very subtle in this before and after they're using here, but I can really see it, for instance, in the reflections of the water on the sand.
Yes, the example was in that you've got on the PDF. It doesn't show it quite as much. I've got the images on my screen, so I can actually show you how the before and after. So it's also about when your images, if they're looking a little bit flat, if you say you had your JPEG that came out of the camera, if you weren't using RAW, or even if you are using RAW and you processed it to be intentionally a little flat so that you can brighten it later, then you can put in a contrast layer on, and that contrast layer just brightens your photograph quite substantially. I just had to put my power on because it said battery running low.
Uh-oh, so that was lucky. Don't want that to
just
happen.
Saved by the bell. Okay.
So can you show us, Tanya?
All right. So I just have to go to. All right. I'll
do the screen
the right
sharing.
Button.
Yeah.
Screen sharing. Okay. Oops. Add people to conversation. Oh no, we don't want to add people to conversation. We want to go.
You
share
don't
screen.
Do it every day. It's difficult.
I'll tell you, with these adjustment layers, I have been shown this a million times, and I never get it, so I'm going to watch very closely here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay. All right. How are we?
Wow. We're going Leo.
Are you doing something? There's something. Oh, I know. I don't know what that means.
I don't know what. Is that better? Is that better?
Yeah, take away the video. There you go. That's it. We were looking at the return video. I get it.
I was going into a deep, dark hole.
Hide that. Yeah, there. That's a good place for it.
Oh, scary. Yeah. Okay. So this is the image that on the left that has had, you know, nothing done to it. What I'm going to do is go down to the and make an adjustment layer. Do you want me to show you how to record it first, so record what you're doing so you don't have to do it again, or just show you how to create the adjustment layer?
Well, you go ahead and do it, but we will mention that you like to make an action out of each of these things because it's something you're going to do again.
So you just can press record before you do all the work.
Yeah, we just press record before we do it. Okay, so we use levels, so the levels adjustment layer, and then what we want to do is we want to use a mask that is, we use screen. So
that's the other thing. There's all these, see all these adjustments there. There's multiply, there's screen, there's dark, so I never know.
Yeah, we use multiply as well.
Okay.
And I think before you do too much, it's good to say what you're doing with it, even if you don't have to remember the word screen. And then you fill the mask, so command I, it just fills it with black, or you just go edit fill with black. So that then means instead of the lightness going over all of the image, I can just brush on the area.
Clever.
I'll use my brush. So I press B for brush, or I go up here for brush. But it's just, okay. And then I just make the, so, okay. So I've got my opacity on, at the top, you can make your brush opacity really strong or really faint.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do it really strong. So that seems quite strong. So you can see it. Can you see it quite easily?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So say I'm just going to do this really basically for you. Just say this background was all too dark. So then I can then go afterwards, if I want to, go to my opacity of that layer, and I could just...
You can tweak it there a little bit. So you're seeing... You turn it all the way up so you can see what you're doing, but then you adjust it so that it's less obvious.
Well, but what we do is we try not to adjust the adjustment layer for the opacity there, because we might want to do five or different areas of one photograph that we lighten, and we don't want to have to move the opacity of that. So you're better to change your brush opacity as you need it.
Got it.
Yeah, so, and then I'll give you another example. One that's probably the most exciting one is I'll do another adjustment layer. Okay, so we'll go to – so we'll do another levels layer. And then we go up and we choose soft light. So soft light is like a contrast but brighten layer. It just makes your photographs look so much more beautiful. See how – Did you just see how the photograph went brighter? But you may find that it makes the skin too contrasty, or it you lose a little bit of detail. So again, we just press Command I if you're in using a Mac, or Edit Fill with Black, and then I will just brush on the
darken down her face a little bit. Yeah.
It's not meant to be for like to adjust density a lot, but it does make things a bit darker. But you can just brighten. You just brighten the image. I could probably I could have made the opacity a lot more. And the good thing is, if you've gone crazy, say if I went too crazy, I'm just being, you know, that you can then press the letter X, and then that can undo whatever you've just done.
Mm.
So and then you go, okay, I want to do it again. You press X back again, and then you work on the image again. So I'll show you a finished image. All right, so I'm going to turn all the layers off. So we're looking at the image on the right now. Now, that darkened. See how – could you see – oh, maybe I should zoom in. If we look at – so see how her face was a little bit – the girl's face was a little bit bright.
Mm-hmm.
The girl on the left, she's a lot paler than her sister. So we could just darken areas. We literally brushed the areas on that we wanted. Then we have – see, that's the lightened layer. See how we've darkened areas and lightened – So that's that one, and then contrast. And then at the end, we have another darken layer. For darkening, we actually use what we call multiply. So I'll go back to the original image and make another adjustment layer. So we do another one, we choose levels, and then we go to multiply. That's what you were talking about, weren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I didn't know it darkened it.
So
I wish they named these more intuitively.
I know, they don't name them very...
you'll remember, I'm sure.
My very good friend Tony Hewitt in WA Perth, who actually told me about multiply when we were both giving seminars, and I was like, oh, this is gold. So that was a really great one to know. So that's... I've just gone to dark now, but obviously you don't want it to cover the whole thing, so we've got to fill that layer with Command-I, and that then just allows you to use your brush to brush on the areas that you want to darken. So now that's too strong, so that means I've got the opacity of my brush a little bit too strong. So I'll go up to my opacity of my brush and reduce it, and I may want to brush off what I just did, so I just press X. That takes my... See over here, it changes your...
Mm-hmm.
Change here. So if you just sort of press X like that,
it flips the black and white. Yep.
Yeah, it flips it. Okay. So I can just now. You just do what. Now that's a bit dark there. So maybe I'll just press X again, and now I will work as it is. Instead of darkening it, it'll undo the darkening and light a bit. So this tool has literally saved hours and hours and hours for our production staff to when they're preparing clients' orders. And then at the very final stage, when the images that have been chosen are created or produced, once they're processed in Lightroom or Adobe Camera Raw, then we do these layers and a few other things. But we always take out creases and that sort of thing. But, yeah, this is gold. And this is... learning this is that has actually come from people like Peter Eastway and Tony Hewitt and Daniel Capobianco, so my colleagues, and that's a really great benefit of being a member of the Australian and New Zealand Photography Institutes and also being involved in WPPI. You know, when you're sharing tips with each other, it's it really helps in your studio.
So just so multiply is for burning or no dodging. No, I always get the
darkening. Yeah, multiply is darkening.
Screen lightens, and then what does soft light do?
So soft light actually just adds contrast. So you should just call soft light contrast. Call it contrast. So see how flat the image is on the right without the contrast?
It makes a huge difference.
And so it makes things that should be vibrant.
And yet it doesn't look at all photoshopped. It makes it more pleasing.
That's what you kind of need to do with raw, because raw kind of comes out muddy. Sort of
flat, yeah, it does. Comes out a bit muddy. You think you've done a great job in raw when you process it, but then once you put that soft light layer on, you go, oh my gosh!
I'm gonna have to start doing this. That explains why my pictures are so bad. No, it doesn't. All right, let's move on to tip number two, which is making an online lookbook.
Yes.
What's that?
Well, we realized that we get a lot of calls for people ringing and to inquire about having a family portrait. And sometimes it's not as easy as we think it should be to explain the value of why they should use us and why we charge for our smaller size photographs $250 and why photographs for the wall, you know, are between $550 and $1,000, for example. Some people are just completely blown away by that, and it's all when it becomes all about the price and not about being attached to the product and really longing for that product that we offer, then we realized we needed to have a product range lookbook. So it's so that when people can get an idea of what finished products look like on the wall of people's homes, and that has had a massive impact on our business. And so I get people coming into the studio now and with their husbands, and they've haven't always come in for a consultation, and they'll say, we want what was on page one, and it was the set of three canvases on the wall, and they're 20 by 28 inches each. That's what we want. And that's $6,000. So, you know, you haven't had to do anything other than send them a lookbook. Now, the lookbook, we were given some great advice by a digital marketing person that we work with. She uses Issue, ISSW. If you go to Issue, you can actually create an online lookbook. Have you guys got my
I have the tips. We're having trouble getting them on the screen.
That's right. I'll
go to ISSU.
I can maybe go to my website and show you mine.
Okay.
While you're doing that.
Issue, you publish. This is cool. This is what you're talking about?
Yes. Yep. So I'll show you on my portrait section. We've got our products. And, this is an example of what a page will look like.
And this isn't printed. This is online. Or is it printed?
It's an online digital. You know how everyone loves flipping pages with your iPad or your iPhone?
Yeah.
This is basically what they're doing. You can flip pages with this is just an example of what the pages look like. So this is the one that I said that.
But you'll give it to them for their iPad.
I'll show you. This is the magazine style here, right? I've just clicked on the link.
Oh, I see. So it's just to give them a website.
Issue can host. Yeah, they can actually host your digital lookbook. So we've just added a link. Oh, look, they've got an advert for Lens Baby. Okay, yeah. I click on this.
Completely coincidental.
They happened twice last week. So people that use this must be a lot of photographers. All right, so I can just click and look through the book. The digital marketing person, Pam Brossman, who gives me a lot of tips and also sends me a lot of clients, she said that this is definitely the way to go. And she said people, they just want to feel like they're reading a book and they want to be able to click instead of just feeling like they're flipping pages. And she said it's a really relaxing thing to do. And I find it really quite a novelty. Other people have said, oh, yeah, it's been around for ages and it's not that exciting. But the proof is in the results with the clients.
Do you do anything like this, Catherine, for your...
No, it's pretty cool. So Can I ask a naive question? Like, you're showing it in their environment. Where are you getting the environment photos? Or are you just showing it in generic environments?
Yes.
It's just
some of the images, when we first started this, we actually just went to iStock photo.
I think it's pasted in the living room. Yeah. But I think it does make a difference to see the size of the image and see what it would look like in a space.
This is actually at a client's home. So now that we want to do this lookbook, now every time we have our images being hung, we can now then go to the client's place afterwards and actually have the real, the real deal. So,
unlike you photographers who have great visual imaginations, we clients need to be shown in a concrete way what it's going to look like.
It's the same thing. I mean, why is there such a huge investment in all displays everywhere?
Right.
Are you still on the Catherine, sorry, I just realized I interrupted you. But what we need to prove to people is what a $250 product looks like. And by showing this, these are gift size images, anything up to approximately A4 size that fit into an 11 by 14 inch frame. We just want to show them they look a little bit better than what you can imagine, just a piece of paper for $250. So that has been a good way to show people as well. So, yeah.
So education.
Very nice. Tip number three. Yeah. ProSelect. Okay. I don't know what ProSelect is.
ProSelect. Okay. I'm glad you don't, because I can show you.
This is a presentation tool that you use. Yeah.
Okay. So ProSelect is what we use for all of our clients to view their images. And it's been around for, I think, way more than 10 years. Peter Howlett in WA in Perth, he created this. Was a photographer, and he saw there was a need. You know Peter?
Oh, yeah.
He's a great, cool. He's a good guy. Excellent. So what you do is you grab the folder of images and you drop them into here. You can just go file, add your new album. So you create a new album, you can just album, add folder of images, as simple as that. And then within, say, a minute, they all just drop into the side column. And then you click on the images tab. So if you see any of the images, you just click on images here, and then you can see everything you need here. Now, what we find really helpful is choosing the images that we want to show the client. So I'll go to the images that we've edited out. So these are the images that we've edited out.
Quite a few.
Yeah, there's a stack. Actually, they're all out of order. But so you can just bring them up. You can just bring more than one image up at a time. Say if they were three images of all the same thing. You can just choose the ones that you want, and then the ones you don't want, you just click. You can actually send them to... Can you just see on the right-hand side? There's a unhappy face, a sort of an average face and a smiley face. You can send the images to whichever folder you want them to go to.
So this you would do with the client looking over your shoulder.
Yeah.
You'd pick the ones they should see, and then they'd give you their feedback, and you'd click those little...
Before the client actually comes in.
Oh, even before.
Before the client comes in, we process the images in Lightroom, and then we put them in just JPEGs and put them into this program. And then we may have 300 to 500 images, and we don't want to show them any more than 30 to 50 images. Usually, I try to stick to around 30. Now, I try to be really, really, really particular because they just get a bit overwhelmed. So it's really nice that when you've got say 10 images of the same thing, if you actually were just clicking on them, and you can actually zoom in and you could see which were the best shots. I can see now that maybe her tongue's showing through a little bit there, but I wouldn't have got a tattoo to retouch. and the other good thing is you can just really simply, that's an image that was uncropped. I can just go to the scissor symbol and see I've already cropped it here. Sorry, it was, so it's very, and then you press the eye symbol and the eye means just to see what it looks like once it's been cropped. And that is a real help because you may have taken a shot where you can find a better way of cropping it. So, for example, if you want to, what's really popular with our clients is a ratio of 1:2. So that's also in this program here. You could do, you can crop it a little bit more creatively if you want to. Not necessarily saying that's right for the photo, but
This is almost like instead of proof sheets. You've got this great tool for showing the clients.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And then once...
Catherine's been taking notes.
I can't believe, just about everyone in Australia, every single person I know that is a photographer uses this program. And
have you seen it before?
No.
No.
I've heard of it,
really?
Though.
Yeah. I've definitely huge heard of it.
Well, it's an Australian program, so maybe
but
it just
Peter Hallett goes to WPPI and has done for many years, and their stand is so crowded when he has his demonstration. So, But I'll show you also another section. This is what... in my earlier days, helped me get my average $6,000 sales. I don't get average $6,000 now, but before the recession, I was getting them, and that was because I had these templates made up. I'll grab you an example. Here's a template here. For each child, I would put make a set of these. This was years ago. I don't necessarily do that now. So you could put an image there, put an image here, and then. And an image here, and then you go, oh, that looks silly, that photo there, so maybe we'll change that one. And then I can also click on the scissors again and zoom in. I can zoom in. We'll see, look, her dress looks a bit funny there, so I better move the image down or crop it or do it later. And, yeah, you can just design things to show people, and then they get a sense of what it looks like. Now, the other thing you can do is you can make it have a double mat if you want to. There's all those sort of things you can do. And I can actually project that onto my screen. You can set in your preferences. A line will be projected to your screen on the wall if you're using a projector. And you can actually put in the preferences. I'll show you the preferences.
So you'll often use this not on a screen but on the wall. You'll actually project it.
Yeah, I'll project it that's on the wall. See how there it says a display calibration. So this is just in preferences. You just put display this page onto the wall, and then you measure what that length is and you key it in. And then when you go to show a client the photo and they say, I will photo this whatever particular size, I can click on the button here and I can show them in whatever size I need to.
If I make a 19 by 14 print, this is what its size is actually going to be on the wall.
Yes. Start off by showing them something really big.
I tend to start with, say, a family portrait. I would do it, say, normally about 24 by 17 for frame, or canvas 20 by 28. That was just one of their family photos.
That's a great
picture. No retouching. It's just is how it is. So they tend to find that it's a lot smaller than what they imagine because they just have no sense, size.
Right. Yeah.
So that's a really good tool. And it's also, you don't have to be pushy with the size. You actually just show them and then they are free to choose and they make their own decisions. So it's not like you're pushing anything on anyone. And with the templates, I used to make a lot of templates, but we found that I have a business coach, Steve Saperito, and he said, because he uses this program and recommends it to everyone as well, he said that if you have too many templates, it might look like you're just trying to do a selling number on a client. So just have a couple and just give them the idea that these are the options, that we have this great way of showing them what things could look like. One really good thing about having the templates is if people say, can we have these three photos together? Well, I can say, well, actually this image standing out too much, it really should have three full-length images, or they just might be happy with that. Or you could say, they might say, can we have it in this order? And you go, but it doesn't work in that order. So you can actually show them what works and they can work it out for themselves as well.
Program is called ProSelect from timeexposure.com. They have a 30-day free trial, so you can try it on the site, timeexposure.com.
What's really great about Peter Hallett is that he has developed so many changes to this program. And you just literally email him, tell him, can you add this to the program? He does it and he brings it out in the next version. So he has upgrades just about every week with little things that people have. See, I said to him, can we put a rotation tool? So that was how we got the rotation tool. And I think that was because I asked him if we could do the rotation.
That's fantastic. Responsive.
So see how I can rotate it if I want to. Because often when I'm shooting family portraits at the beach, I don't always get the lens, the horizon completely straight, I have to admit. And, it's so much easier if you just – and then – I think you had the rotation in there. I can't actually claim that. I think I said I just want subtle rotations, not – see, that's a big rotation.
Yeah.
So you kind of have subtle now. So he just said – he just added it, so it's alt and it's gentle.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Gentle rotations.
Tanya Niwa, so great to talk to you. TanyaNiwa.com.au. And there's lots of images on the site so you can see her work. Just beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Yeah, and she launched her new website today.
Today?
Yesterday.
Just for us.
Yesterday.
Well, it was good to have a deadline. It was a year and a half ago that we were planning to have a new website. So
it's about time. I know that feeling. We're planning a new website, too.
And then it's dated by the time it gets
right, exactly.
That's the nature of
this. Tanya, such a pleasure talking to you, and beautiful work. Thank you for joining us.
Thank
we really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining us. And she also has an active blog. She's on Facebook, so those are other ways to find. We'll have the links in the show notes. But thank you so much for joining us, and have a great rest of your day, and happy holidays and all
thank
of it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you.
Thank you, Tanya. And thank you, Catherine Hall. It was always a great pleasure. CatherineHall.net for Catherine's blog and more information about her work, and lots of great images on there, too.
I'm just going to go home and watch Breaking Bad like candy.
Yeah, eat it like candy. Take a break, because we're going to be gone next week, right?
Yes, we are.
We will be back. This is our last show of 2011. We'll be back in the new
and
year.
We're coming back with something, I don't know what yet, but it's going to be a bang. It's going to be something very dude-oriented.
Dude-oriented.
So it's going to be like either car racing or
something extreme.
Or storms, but something
did you say bullets?
Exciting.
Okay.
We're working on it.
I look forward to it. That's January 3rd. We do the show 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern time at twit.tv. If you miss any show, all of them are available. You can get audio, but I don't know why you would. There's great high-quality video available at twit.tv of every one of our shows. And please go and get the previous shows that you haven't seen, because each of them is a gem in its own right. Happy holidays, Catherine.
Happy holidays to you.
Thanks
too.
For being here.
Thanks, everyone. Happy holidays.
Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.
Yeah.
On Twit Photo.